Today's sermon is a continuation of last week's sermon on tithing. More specifically, what we talked about last week was first tithe. And what we learned as we went through that particular subject is that the tithe belongs to God. And because it belongs to God, it is holy. God makes things holy. Our giving the tithe is an acknowledgement that God is the possessor of all and the one who has blessed us with the opportunity to be able to earn an increase upon which to tithe. We learned that the principle of tithing predated the nation of Israel, so it's not something that came into being at Mount Sinai. It's something that predated that and continues to be a principle that is to be practiced by God's people. That would be all of us. We saw that the tithe was to be given to God in the time of Abraham and his family. It was given directly to Melchizedek. As you move forward in time to when God began working with the descendants of Abraham and Jacob, the nation of Israel, then the tithes were given to the Levites. In the church age, the church has returned to giving the tithe to the Melchizedek priesthood, giving it to the church and those who, for the use and administration by those who are overseeing the household of God. The purpose of the first tithe has always been designated to support God's work, and in our time, it is designated in order to finance the care of the flock, to rent buildings, to be able to provide for the flock, and to also share the truth of the gospel in writing and in various other ways where God opens the door. And we looked at Malachi chapter 3, verse 8, which tells us that we are not, if we do not tithe, if we earn an increase and we do not tithe on it, then we are robbing God. And so it's something that it would seem wise to do in order to have God's blessings. So tithing is a way that we can honor God as our creator and our sustainer and our provider. He provides all good things for all of us. And you know, as you look at tithing, tithing is not something I know anything about in the sense I don't know whether you tithe or not. That's between you and God. And the only time that we ever check to whether you tithe or not is if you're going to be ordained. And so if you're going to be ordained, they sort of expect that you're doing that. So they used to do that. I'm not even sure they do that today. But it's between you and God. It's not something I know about. If you ask me about it, I'll explain it to you. And if you tell me you're not doing it and you are working, I'll say, well, you probably should begin doing that. And that's going to be up to you again, whether you do it or not. The question we want to examine today is this. Does the Bible reveal that we are to give more than one tithe? Now, when I began attending church or began to find out about the church, one of the things that I discovered was that we are to tithe. I read the booklet on tithing. But the booklet on tithing talks about first tithe only, goes through the scriptures that we reviewed. And then I went to Big Sandy and was a student there. And while at Big Sandy, we had gone into, I forget whether it was Gladewater or we had gone on over to Longview, I'm not sure which one, but we were on our way back, and the people that I was traveling with started talking about 2T. And I said, excuse me, what is 2T? I didn't know what it was. So they explained that it was a second tithe. So I thought, are you kidding me? A second tithe? Where did this come from? So they did explain that, yes, it is a biblical principle and there is a second tithe. And at the same, and this was the first year that I ever went to the feast. And as I went to the feast, and so I happened to be working out on the grounds. They were using the skills that I had, which were few. They did find out I could push a lawnmower and I could work with shears and weed eaters and that kind of stuff. And I could do a pretty good job with that. I could sweep the walks. They didn't have those wonderful blowers, like leaf blowers like we have today. You had a broom and you got to sweep all the walkways and things like that every Friday before the Sabbath, you know, because people would stroll around the grounds and things on the Sabbath. But these other students that had experience with the feast, they're all excited about it. The feast is coming. And being a cynical, worldly individual who was just beginning the journey of faith, I just doubted anything was exciting as these people portrayed it to be. So I doubted the feast was going to be all this exciting and went to my first feast, and it was okay. It was okay. I spent several hours in this refrigerated truck with huge blocks of ice with an ice pick, chipping them into, I believe, 6 or 8 blocks, shoving them down this little ramp, and then they would grind them up into ice cubes and sell them to the people that were tenting in the piney woods. So that was a big part of my feast, and I ate a lot of peanut butter. We didn't know that there was stuff that we shouldn't be eating in the hostess fruit pies at the time. So I ate a lot of those and had a few people take me out for a nice meal a couple of times there. But it was a good experience on the whole. But I wasn't quite as excited about it as other people were. But, you know, you don't get excited about the feast until you come to experience it and begin to really understand what it's all about. So I'm more excited about the feast today than I ever was back in 1972 when I began to keep the feast, because I understand so much more about it and its significance for you and me and ultimately for all of mankind. So God, the feast is a big thing to God. It's something that He wants us to keep, and He wants us to make the most of that opportunity that we have to come before Him at all of the feast days, but especially in those feast days that remind us that something beautiful and wonderful is coming that we can be a part of. So we looked at, just as a reminder here, as we begin to look at this subject, we realize that when we give the first tithe, and from an Old Testament perspective, it clearly tells you that it was to be given to the Levites. And we looked at that last week. And none of it was to be eaten. None of it was to be consumed by the tithe payer. But as we begin to look at this subject, we find something quite interesting. And let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 12. My wife was asking me, are you going to be able to, you're going to have enough information just talking about second tithe to fill the time? And she said, you know, my thought was, I'm a minister, I can usually fill the time. So, but I think there's something good to be said, not just to fill the time, and that you'll find beneficial. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 12. Yeah, Liz doubted whether I was going to be able to fill the time. So we'll see if I can. Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 17 and 18. Verse 17 says, "You may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain." So remember, the first tithe was not to be eaten. But this tithe that is talking about here is to be eaten. "You shall not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain, or your new wine, or your oil, of the firstborn of your herd or your flock." So you are not to eat those things within your gates, that is, in your own home, your own home area, wherever it may be. You are not to eat it there. "Of any of your offerings which you vow, of your freewill offerings, or of the heave offering of your hand, but you must eat them before the Lord your God, in the place which the Lord your God chooses." So you are not to eat them at home. You are to go to the place where the Lord your God would choose, and you are to eat them there before God. And who is to enjoy these good things that you have harvested and that God has blessed you with? It says, "You and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant." So your whole household is to go up before the Lord and to eat before the Lord, it tells us here. "And the Levite who is within your gates, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God in all to which you put your hands." So you're to eat before the Lord, and it's all part of rejoicing. It is all part of rejoicing before the Lord in all to which you put your hands. So when you eat before the Lord, it is to be a time of rejoicing. But rejoicing in what? What are you rejoicing about? There must be something significant that would cause you to rejoice. Is it just in the fact that you have grain and that you have cattle and all of these good things that God has blessed you with? Is it just like a thanksgiving? Or is there more to it than that? So we are to tithe, and when the word there that speaks of a tithe here is the same word that is used in regard to the first tithe. It's not any different. It's the same word. And you're to eat it before the Lord your God. And the way that was done anciently in Israel was you would go up to the tabernacle, which was at Shiloh, until the tabernacle was destroyed and the ark was captured. And then as God helped to reestablish the Ark of the Covenant to Israel, eventually David was inspired to build the temple, to gather all of the things for it. Solomon actually undertook the building and finished that. And then people would come up to the feast at the temple of God. And they were to eat before the Eternal so that they could enjoy what God was had given to them. Now, the tithe that is to be eaten is further discussed in Deuteronomy chapter 14. Let's go to Deuteronomy 14. Deuteronomy 14, verse 22. Again, this verse says, "You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year." So again, it emphasizes tithing, 10% of what you take in. It says in verse 23, "And you shall eat before the Lord your God." So again, this the tithe is talking about is a tithe that is to be eaten. It is to be eaten, so we are able to discern between the first and second tithe, because this particular tithe, we're clearly told to eat it before the Lord. "In the place where he chooses to make his name abide." So, anciently, that was either the location of the tabernacle or the temple. And currently, in our time, where does God make his name abide? It's where God opens the door, where we can be able to secure a hall and have a place in which we can meet and conduct services and offer praises and honor to God and learn about him and his great plan. So you go to the place where God chooses to make his name abide, and what are you to eat? It says the tithe of your grain. So this particular tithe you can eat of that grain, and your new wine, and your oil, of the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. So these verses add, not only are we to eat before God, here in this particular verse, it doesn't tell us that we're to rejoice, but it does tell us that we are to learn to fear the Lord our God always. To learn to fear him always. We're to eat these things we're supposed to go up before God. We're to eat these things, and the outcome is that we would learn to fear the Lord our God always. Not cower before him, but to fear him in the sense of reverencing him and respecting him and honoring him, giving him all of his due. We are to learn to fear the Lord your God always. To just live that way, where you walk every step respectful and reverent before God, realizing that God is the one who is judging us. He is the one to whom we are accountable. And we have to keep that in mind as we go about our daily lives. And we also realize as we go to the feast, as we'll see here, that God offers us some magnificent things. And it's conditional whether we will be able to enjoy those things in the ultimate sense. It's not assured, it's conditional. And our right fear and right respect for God helps us to maintain the proper perspective and approach which prepares us to be a part of those things that God is going to offer us. So God tells us something else in verse 24. It says, "But if the journey is too long for you, so that you are not able to carry the tithe." So if you have an oxen, you have had a bountiful harvest, so you've got a lot of grain, you've got a lot of fruit, and you're living a fair distance from the location where God has placed His name, that may be a pretty tough journey to keep the sheep and all the things together and move on down the road, especially when many other people who are going up to the feast are going to be on the road as well. And, if you're going to have to stop along the way, maybe it's a great distance away. You know, you had the example in the book of Acts of the Ethiopian eunuch who had come up to the feast. He had come up to the feast and he was on his way home and he met Philip, the deacon, and went through the book of Isaiah about the Messiah and was baptized. But that's a long way from Ethiopia to Jerusalem. So if you're driving cattle and hauling all this stuff up there, makes it a more difficult journey. And you're going to have to stop along the way. You're either going to camp, or if you have to stop in and stay at an inn, it becomes expensive. So God said, "There, let me give you an alternative here rather than take everything up to the feast." He says, "But if the journey is too long, what can you do? If the journey is too long and you are not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put His name is too far from you when the Lord your God blesses you, then you shall exchange it for money." So you can take that tithe and you can exchange it for money. So you can sell the oxen, you can sell the sheep, you can sell the grain, and that is your tithe, and convert it to money. What we do is we take the money and convert it to oxen and sheep and grain and fruit and all of those kinds of things, don't we? It's interesting how we do it differently, because none of us wants to put that oxen in the back of our car and take it to the feast, or in the back of our horse trailer or whatever, because not only do you have to haul it over there, but then you have to slaughter it and cut it into steaks or get a big spit to set it up on or whatever you're going to do. Nothing wrong with that, but that's a lot of work. So we can usually, money is the best way to go for us living in the 21st century. So you shall exchange it for money, take the money in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. You can go to the place where the Lord your God chooses. And so it is, God gives you a way to deal with this and to make your journey as reasonable as possible. And what God is doing is helping you go to the feast. He's helping you go to the feast. He says, "I want you to use 10% of your income to go to the feast." That's a significant thing that God is telling you about how important the feasts are. And the Feast of Tabernacles is a focal point, but you can use your second tithe on all of the feast of God. And it's telling you that these are significant times that God is saying, "I want you to allocate a significant portion of your finances toward." They're important. They are important. And so then God goes on and tells us something more about this, beginning in verse 26. He says, "And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires." Oh, yes. This is wonderful. I can spend it on anything I want. Whatever your heart desires. Oh, that just opens up this wide panorama of options that are available. But it's not quite that open. And because as you look at that and understand it, a better way to basically look at that as you is that not whatever your heart desires, but whatever your heart rightly desires. Because there are things you might desire that God would say, "I'm really not real pleased with that." So you have to make sure, one, that whatever your heart desires is pleasing to God, and two, that it's going to be something that is going to contribute to your learning to fear the Lord your God always, your rejoicing before God. It's going to be something that God would be pleased with. So that has to be a guide to whatever you purchase. So we have to desire those things that are pleasing to God, and we want to buy those things that contribute to our learning to fear the Lord our God always. So what can you spend the money on? He tells you here. He says, for oxen or sheep. You can spend it for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink. And he's not talking about grape juice here. He's talking about wine. He's talking about wine with alcohol in it or similar drink. I'm not sure what other similar drinks they had for that time. For whatever your heart desires or rightly desires. So you are to, you can spend it on, this is a feast. I know that my son, in going to school, he would leave each year to go away to the feast. And his friends weren't in the church and didn't really understand everything about the church. But one of his friends called it, he couldn't think of the word feast. So he called it, you know, a feast is a big dinner. So that's what he called it, the big dinner. Are you going to the big dinner this year? And so, yes, I am going to the big dinner. So that's how he conceived of it as somebody that really was unfamiliar with what the feast is all about. But we can spend it for oxen or sheep. So if you want a nice steak, you can have a nice steak. Or if you want a lamb chops or whatever you want, you can have those. You can have a nice bottle of wine. You don't have to drink. You don't have to drink, but you can. But drink in a way that would be pleasing to God. And he says here that you can buy those things that you would like to have. So maybe at the feast there are things that you would like to have that you don't normally have. I like cashews. Cashews, if you buy a whole container of them, are pretty expensive. But at the feast, I can buy that whole container at Sam's and stick my hand in there fairly often and enjoy some cashews. Or whatever you would make your feast memorable and enjoyable. And, you know, if you like a particular kind of chocolate, you know, get a nice type of chocolate. Or if you, whatever it may be, to go out to dinner and enjoy the occasion with friends. It says here, you shall eat before the Lord your God. So you have to think about, as you're eating, you are eating before God. And that's why you have to stop and think about, what am I doing? Would this be pleasing to God? And you know, it seems that as you think about this, it's a, you know, would God, you have to think about, would God be pleased with gluttony? Well, I like the cashews, but on probably my third big container, he may be a little unhappy with that and think maybe you've gotten a little carried away with cashews or whatever it may be. Would it's been my unfortunate experience over the years to have to go to talk to people in that are attending the feast that have been drunk and have been disruptive at their location, and that's an unpleasant experience. And see, you're to eat before God. You know, is God going to be pleased with that? So you have to think about your behavior and your example, and that you are before God. The purpose is spiritual, not just physical. It tells you here that you shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. He has no part or inheritance with you. So we should remember the Levite. And we should remember those who don't have as much. Some people, it's a real struggle for them to go to the feast. And financially, it's a great strain. So hopefully we know each other well enough to where we can consider one another. You think of the Levite, you also think of the members of the church who are attending, that maybe they're just barely making it. And for them, it's a pretty lean feast. But we can help them to enjoy more of a feast. I know Mr. Hutto and I were speaking last week about having a Houston get-together at the feast. So we'll have a Houston get-together at his place or my place or someplace in order that we can enjoy one another's company as part of the feast. And we may invite some non-Houstonians as well. So, but we're glad to have people, and it's a wonderful time to fellowship and to eat together. And we had a deal at the place where we were staying last year. They had a free room we could use, so we invited the brethren over. That particular night was after it had rained in Galveston, and so the mosquitoes had been, hardly any mosquitoes. It had been so dry last year, but with that rain, it seemed like the mosquitoes said, "Hey, we got to make up for lost time." And so they were out in force, and I was standing out there directing people up to where we were meeting, and I lost probably several pints of blood just standing out there that particular night. I was hoping it'd all get there and I could go upstairs. But anyway, we'll have some sort of an occasion to get together as God's people. And as you have the opportunity, as God has blessed you, what God wants us to do is to take those blessings and share them with others. Invite somebody over. Invite somebody out. Pass a little cash along to somebody if you have it to give. You may not give it to them directly. You may have somebody else do it. But it's a way that we look out for each other and we help everybody to have an enjoyable feast. And it says here that so we want to make the feast enjoyable for everyone, make it a memorable occasion, not have anybody go over and just feel isolated and nobody cares and any of that kind of thing. We want to have a good feast for all, and we all contribute to that. Let's go to Isaiah. Look at a couple of scriptures here that relate to the feast. Isaiah chapter 25. Isaiah chapter 25, verses 6 and 7. Isaiah 25, verses 6 and 7. Hear the prophet Isaiah, and if you want to read one book before the Feast of Tabernacles to focus your mind upon the feast, Isaiah is probably the book to read. Isaiah was given one vision after another of the coming kingdom of God, and not every chapter deals with the coming kingdom, but there are many that do. And as you read it, you can just see the word pictures that God inspired him to write down that we can all drink in of and think of the world to come. And these two verses we're going to look at here, just a couple of those. It says, "And in this mountain," and that mountain ultimately is going to be Mount Zion, where God will establish his headquarters in Jerusalem. "And in this mountain the Lord of hosts will make for all people." The feast ultimately will be a feast for all people. Right now it's a feast for the people of God. But there's coming a day when all people will have the opportunity to be a part of the family of God, a part of the people of God. God will make a feast for all people. He says a feast of choice pieces. A feast of choice pieces. Pieces of what? He's talking about that ox or that lamb or that goat or whatever it may be. Choice pieces of meat that you can enjoy. The better cuts of meat. A feast of choice pieces. A feast of wines on the lees. And I know there's a whole technical study you could go through about wine on the lees, but what he's talking about is not the wine with the twist-off caps that has never seen a cork, which may be okay. Nothing wrong with it if that's what you choose to drink, but I'm just saying get that you can use, if you have the money, if you've saved your tithe, maybe you can buy a better bottle of wine that you could enjoy at the feast. I'm not so much of a wine drinker. I don't, wine's okay. I'm more of a, pretty pedestrian and drink beer. So I like a good beer, and so instead of drinking the Buds, maybe it's time to get a little better quality and see what it tastes like. I know the ones that I like now since we've moved here is the Shiner Ruby Red, the one with the grapefruit in it, which is pretty good. On a hot day, let me tell you, it's a winner. So anyway, but the thing is, it's a enjoy some things that maybe you don't enjoy normally. You know, a nice type of cheese that you wouldn't buy. It's too expensive. You know, we're buying those American singles versus the better quality cheese. Get real cheese and enjoy that. So you have wine on the lees, of fat things full of marrow, of well-refined wines on the lees. So as you think about this, we're to eat before the Lord, and it is a feast. But what we sometimes do is we stop at that point, and we don't go beyond it. And that's where I was when I first began to keep the feast. It was physical. There was there was spiritual, but the physical was more important, more significant in my mind. And I think that's where we're at when we begin to keep the feast. It's more of a physical delight, and we don't see the spiritual. And that comes with time. We should enjoy the good physical things, but you know what? When it's all said and done, the good physical things don't matter. They don't matter so much. They're just a part of keeping the feast, and we can enjoy them, but we also begin to see beyond them. We begin to see beyond them that the feast is not the food we eat. The feast is not the place we go. The feast is not the quality of your accommodations. That's not what lasts. You're going to leave all that. But the thing that can stay with you that you won't forget are the spiritual things that you begin to see. The things that you're living for. The things that really count. And he says here in verse 7, as he's talking about this feast that he's going to make on his mountain, he says, "And he will destroy on this mountain the surface of the covering cast over all peoples." There's coming a time when everybody will be able to see it. We see it. Most people don't. And that's what God wants you to see, is there's something really, truly significant that is spiritual, that you have the chance to be a part of forever. And yes, the physical things, the fellowship, the food, all of that is a good thing. We're social beings, and that's all part of a relationship. But there are more significant things. He will destroy on the mountain the surface of the covering cast over all people. He'll open their minds to see it, to see what he's offering them, to see what he's, and we've been offered it now. We can see it today. And he says, going on in verse 7, "And the veil that is spread over all nations." That's what it's really all about. The lifting of the veil. The revelation of the truths about the coming kingdom of God. The revelation about the King of Kings. The revelation about the saints being raised from the dead. The saints serving under Jesus Christ. Serving under Him and being part of that team that will be teaching the world to come. God will remove that veil. God will remove that veil. And the physical things are good, but it's not the end point. And as you begin to mature, you begin to see what's really significant. You know, as I look at the feast, when we first began feasting, we tried all sorts of physical things, and where we went was really important. But you know, it really, I like to go to nice places and see different places, and I've always enjoyed that. But I'm less motivated to do that now. And so, New Braunfels is fine with me. Those of you from Texas, they may say, "New Braunfels? What in the world are we going to New Braunfels for?" It really doesn't matter if it's New Braunfels or whatever the smallest, most podunk place in Texas is. That we are able to gather together and focus upon the truths of God is what matters. That's what's significant. Let's go to Isaiah 55 and see some things that relate to verse 7 there in chapter 25, where it talks about removing the veil. Isaiah 55, verse 1. Isaiah 55, verse 1. Ho, everyone who thirst, come to the waters. That's what you do when you go to the feast. That's why you go to that place. You are thirsty. And you are coming to the waters. You're coming to the waters to drink. It says, and you who have no money, you have no money. So you may not have a lot to go to the feast on. You aren't going to have a sumptuous feast from a physical point of view. It says, and you who have no money, come buy and eat. Yes, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. You see, the truths of God, we can't purchase those. We don't need money to have that wine and that milk. Come and buy wine and milk without money and without price. He's talking about spiritual food, spiritual drink. He says, why do you spend your money for what is not bread? You know, you can spend all your money on and focus your mind on the physical things and really have nothing to show for it. And your wages for what does not satisfy. You know, as we all know, when we go to the feast, we may have wonderful meals and things, but you know what? We still get hungry, don't we? We come home and we're still hungry. Most of us try not to be as hungry as we were at the feast because we can't fit into our suits quite as well or our outfits quite as well. We know that none of us are going to lose weight during the feast most of the time. But, you know, don't make that your focus because it's not going to satisfy in the ultimate sense. Listen carefully to me and eat what is good. And let your soul delight itself in abundance. And where do we gain abundance? We get it from the spiritual things. Verse 3, incline your ear and come to me. Hear, and your soul shall live, and I will make an everlasting covenant with you. The sure mercies of David. Something everlasting. A covenant with God that lasts forever. The things that really satisfy. So as we go to the feast, enjoy the physical, but also keep in mind the focal point that God is bringing us to is to come there to the feast where God has placed His name and drink in of the spiritual knowledge that God is imparting to us. Let's go back to Psalm 63, beginning in verse 1. Psalm 63, verse 1. Psalm 63, verse 1. O God, you are my God. Early I will seek you. I'm going to seek you first. I'm going to seek you early. You're my first priority. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh longs for you in a dry and thirsty land where there is no water. So I have looked for you in the sanctuary to see your power and your glory. We go to God and the way has been opened to God's throne to come before Him and talk to Him, to share our thoughts and feelings and desires and our challenges with Him. We're like a dry and thirsty land apart from God, where there is no water. But as we come to God, God gives us, He quenches our thirst and gives us those things that we need. Verse 3, because your loving kindness is better than life. The extension of God's loving kindness is better than life itself. My lips shall praise you. Thus I will bless you while I live. I will lift up my hands in your name. My soul shall be satisfied as with marrow and fatness in my mouth. shall praise you with joyful lips. He's talking about spiritual things, but comparing them to the physical, which we can all understand. Verse 6, when I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches, because you have been my help. Therefore, in the shadow of your wings, I will rejoice. My soul follows close behind you. Your right hand upholds me. You know, we've been given the opportunity to be able to come into the shadow of God's wings, where He protects us and watches over us and provides for us. And God wants us to give us the good things, the really, truly good things that stay with us. No matter how bad times get, the offer of God's kingdom never changes. It's always there. It's always ours to enjoy. So, as you think about this tithe applying it to the feast, let's go to one final major scripture we want to look at in this regard in Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy chapter 16. Deuteronomy 16, verse 13. Here it's speaking specifically about the Feast of Tabernacles, and it says, "You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days, when you have gathered from your threshing floor and your wine and from your wine press." So when you've gathered the tithe from your threshing floor and your wine press, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite, the stranger and the fatherless, and the widow who are within your gates. You shall rejoice before your God. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place which the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you in all your produce and in all the work of your hands, so that you surely rejoice. It is a time of rejoicing, a time to recognize that we are God's people, and that He has a great plan that He's working out, and He wants us to be a part of it. So as we go, and maybe our health isn't so good, a number of us are facing some serious health challenges. It's hard to get up and go. But even though we may not feel so good, never lose sight of the fact of what God offers you and me, and rejoice in those things. Rejoice before God. Rejoice with God's people. Rejoice with family. Rejoice with friends. And you know, we've over the years gotten to know many people and had wonderful feasts, and with our family and with our friends, and you have as well. And it is a most wonderful thing. Our God is a most practical God, because He says, you know what? I want you to keep my feast. And I want you to rejoice in those feasts, and I want them to be special. And so I would like you to take that 10% that you set aside as increase and use it to rejoice in my feast. God was quite practical in understanding that for most people they would have to travel some distance to get to the feast. And so He said, well, here's some money to help you be able to travel and to be able to get to the feast. And it was quite wise in being able to see what we should do and how we should do it. The festival tithe, the second tithe, provides a structured way for God's people to meet the financial challenges of extended periods of travel. And as you look at the New Testament, it's interesting that we see Jesus Christ keeping the feast. Specifically, we see Jesus Christ keeping the Passover, and we see Him attending the Feast of Tabernacles in the book of John. After Christ's death, we find that His disciples continued to keep the feast. 50 days after He had been resurrected, we find that they were keeping the Feast of Pentecost, weren't they? We also find Paul kept the holy days and instructed the brethren in keeping the holy days. You know, he gives quite a bit of instruction in the book of 1 Corinthians about keeping the Passover and the days of unleavened bread. So as we examine the New Testament, we find that the early church kept these feasts. And for many Christians, this meant extensive travel and considerable expense. And as you examine the scriptures, we find that there is no indication that anything changed in regard to God's instructions regarding keeping the second tithe. There's no doctrinal discussion that mentions a change in the New Testament in this regard. So we have to conclude they kept the feast, and the way that God chose to finance the feast are still there. So God and his church are quite aware that not everyone has enough festival tithe to attend the Feast of Tabernacles. And there are a variety of reasons why various individuals can't keep the feast. Some have become ill. Some have don't have much money, period. They don't have they've been out of a job. There are various things that can happen. So the church has set up a system where we're able to help a certain number go to the feast, offer them what we call festival assistance. The precedent for helping others enjoy the feast is found in Nehemiah 8:10, where it says there, "Send portions to those for whom nothing is prepared." That's in the context of the Feast of Trumpets, but it applies to the other feast as well. So we seek to help others go to the feast. We ask people to do the best they can to help themselves. So, you know, if you can set aside a little bit of the money that you have and save a little bit each month or each week to go to the feast and set that aside and keep it, then as we begin to ask for people to fill out the forms, then you'll have a little bit to contribute, and the church can hopefully help you with going to the feast. And the church does not offer you a lot of money to go to the feast. It doesn't offer you a lot of help in the sense that you're going to be staying in the best accommodations, but good accommodations, but not the best. It's a little bit to help everybody go, and you try to spread it out as far as you can to help as many go as possible. So we try to help everybody go and enjoy the feast, and then hopefully we will watch out for each other and help the other people be able to enjoy the feast as they go. So in summary, from the scriptures we've examined today, we see that there is a second or festival tithe. It's to be saved in order to travel and enjoy God's festivals. Saving our second tithe sends a message to God. It sends the message to God that we believe in His plan, and we want to come before Him and learn to fear Him always. We want to come before Him and rejoice. Tithing, a festival tithe, tells God that we agree with His promise to send His Son and set up His kingdom. And saving our festival tithe also shows that we know God and the Father will bring the heavenly Jerusalem. The new heavens and the new earth will be established, and we can be a part of it forever. I'd like to quote from Revelation chapter 22, verse 14, to close. Revelation chapter 22, verse 14. He says, "Blessed are those who do His commandments, that they may have the right to the tree of life and may enter through the gates into the city." That city is real. It is coming. And we can be a part of it. And the feasting that we're going to do in the next few weeks is going to remind us of that great city and our part in it. So keep your second tithe and look forward to be able to spend it and rejoice before God.